Welcome back to the Resilience Institute today for episode 26. And today we are talking about Knee Cave, the big, bad, dreaded Knee Cave. And I'm here to tell you it is not as bad as you think or have been led to believe or get told on social media. And today we're talking about in any lower leg movement, like strength training, where we're weight bearing. So squats, leg presses, lunges, hack squats, pendulum squats, those kind of things. And at the end, I'll also discuss knee cave or that knee adduction in sporting situations. And the main thing I want you to know is you're not as fragile as you think. Like, you're not just going to spontaneously combust if your knees do cave. And sometimes it's actually your body using that strategy to create more power or strength because you haven't set up in a proper stance or width or technique in the first place. So the first three topics will be around gym knee cave, and the last is the main and most important one that most people look at, and that refers to sport and athletes. And the first one is that stability is a very overused term. And when it comes to knee stability, in inverted commas, again, a very overused term. And when we look at it, stability is defined as the state of a joint remaining or promptly returning to proper alignment through an equalization of forces. And this requires synergy between bones, joint capsules, ligaments, muscles, tendons, and sensory receptors, right? So stability comes from the skill and neuromuscular control of the brain. Like, it's a pattern, right? And this is usually by repeated practice. Like anything, when you do a movement or whatever, your brain then, neuroplasticity, it actually learns it and learns that process. And to make it easier next time, it creates stronger pathways, neural pathways, so it's second nature. And that's how we get better. That's practice. So you just shoving your knees out isn't actually going to improve stability. You need to actually practice the movement you want to be good at and get good at to be stable at it. Like, just being stable in a single leg squat, like it's the holy grail, like the single leg squat, that doesn't automatically mean you're going to be stable in a double leg squat or in a walking lunge or in sport. Like, they're all task specific, meaning they are all separate skills and motor patterns that you need to be able to do. So just being able to do a single leg squat doesn't then automatically transfer and make you stable, in inverted commas again, in those other tasks. Like, yes, of course, like there's transfer and having, and this will obviously increase your ability to do the other exercises and give you a better base. But there's this false notion that, like, if you can single leg squat, you're ready for sport, which is not only bullshit, it's actually dangerous. And or people think, like, oh, if you can single leg squat, you'll be more agile or faster, or you won't have knee pain, or you'll have perfect strong knees. And it doesn't work like that. Again, like, having the general strength and endurance of your lower limb, like all your muscles there, it's important, like extremely important, right? But to be good at your sport and to be stable in your sport and coordinated or any other skill, you need to, wait for it, practice your sport or the specific task you want to be good at. Like, that's it. And the second point is talking about the tripod foot position. So first point is it's a skill. Stability is, it's not just this thing that comes from one movement, right? The second is the tripod foot position. So knee cave is only problematic or of importance in strength training, especially if there's pain, discomfort, dysfunction, or decreased performance. Other than that, it isn't a bad thing. And valgus isn't even just the knee going in. Like, it's a combination of so many movements. You've got hip internal rotation, hip adduction, and then you also have foot, tibia, pelvis, and trunk motion. Like, valgus and knee stability and everything is a complex 3D movement. It's not just the knee going side to side, okay? Like, you need to get that out of your head that it's just your knee going in. And the way you stabilize your body is you always start with the feet, right? You can't expect to be stable up the chain if you're on unstable feet with poor coordination or endurance or a poor foundation, right? So you need to sort the feet out, and then from there, the brain will typically be fine. Like, it'll be easy to stabilize. Like, one of the easiest ways to stabilize someone who can't do an RDL or balance is just to give them this tripod foot position. Like usually they'll be putting their weight too far back in their foot or sometimes too far forward, and it puts off our center of gravity and our balance, and that's what makes it hard to stabilize. And the way we do this is the tripod foot position. So this is where we put even pressure in our big toe, our little toe, and our heel. And this not only gives us a stable base of support over 3 points, like we know that 2 points is better than one, 3 points is better than two. Like the more base of support you have in contact with the ground, the better your stability will be and your balance. But this stable base, it also allows us to push into the ground. And this may shock you, and it will probably shock a lot of people, but we actually need to pronate to apply force into the ground. Like pronation isn't the devil. We actually need it, right? But for some reason, it's so common to people are like, you have to avoid knee cave and you've got to try and do this and that. And it's so common. You see like a million videos teaching the cue of push your knees out, shove your knees out, spread the floor with your feet. Like, but when you actually shove your knees out, and you go onto the outside of your foot, you're now going away from that tripod position that we need. You're going onto 2 points of support, your pinky toe and then your heel, right? And now you're unbalanced because you're only on this outer part of your foot. And as we know, we need those 3 points of stable contact to give us that good foundation of balance and support. And we also know that to produce force, we need to pronate and push into the ground. Like that's Newton's third law. For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. So you push into the ground and it pushes you back. So if you're supinating your foot like everyone gets taught and gets obsessed with, i.e. you shove your knees out and you get out on your pinky toe and your heel and you take the pressure off your big toe, you now physically can't produce as much force into the ground because you're opening up when you need to be pushing in and down. Like, so then our body's going to be like, okay, I'm going to try and put force into the ground, but you're extremely supinated and you can't because you've opened up. And as we know, our brains are a lot smarter than us. And guess what? Your brain will then go, hey, I need to cave your knees in so you can put all the weight, because when you cave in, the weight then goes back onto the big toe, right? So it will actually cave your knees in inverted commas, because it's necessary for force production. Like people see this as bad, but you actually need this pronation. And the result is now your brain caves your knees in and now you can apply force. Like it's not actually a bad thing. It just means you've set up wrong or you're doing something wrong in your setup or technique. So your brain is fixing the problem for you by caving your knees in. And that's the whole problem is people think it's bad, but it's actually your brain fixing something you've stopped to begin with. And the third topic is around shoving your knees out. So we go on from the tripod foot and people say, shove your knees out. And yes, when you drastically jam your knees out, like you feel like your glutes are activated. Don't get me wrong. I understand where you're coming from. But when you do this, you're actually just putting them in this shortened, contracted position. Like if we look at length-tension relationships, our muscle is actually weakest when the muscle is either fully shortened or fully lengthened. So we know when a muscle contracts, it's shortening. When it lengthens, that's the eccentric. So you've got concentric contraction, that's it getting shorter, and you've got an eccentric contraction where it's lengthening, right? And that's fully lengthened. There's a sweet spot in the middle where we are our strongest. So think about it when you do a bicep curl. If you fully flex your bicep is now at its weakest. And if you fully lengthen it and straighten your arm, you're weakest. It's that middle spot where your arm, your elbow is about 90 degrees that it's the strongest, right? And example for our knees, when we adduct and we internally rotate, fully caved in, we are weak. But then on the opposite of that, if we fully jam out, we are also weak. But because we have that shortened contraction, we feel like we're activated and strong, but it's not, it's weak. So when we squat with our knees jammed out and we don't have the strength to get back up, guess what happens? Our brain will then say, hey, I need to get my knees in so I can get my glutes in their strong position to get me back up out of this position by producing force, right? Your brain is smarter than you. That's why you have this knee cave. It's not because you've got weak knees or weak glutes. Like, yes, that can be a cause. But for most people, it's because you're setting up wrong in the first place, thinking it's better for you. Knees in line with the middle toes is the sweet spot where all the muscles are primed and they're stable to produce force. They're in their optimal length. And if you're already in this good position to start with, your brain isn't going to need to cave you in to save you. Like at high loads, of course, like if you look at Olympic weightlifting, the brain needs every bit of strength it can get. So when you see this type of knee cave or knee valgus, it's because they're doing such a high load, like a maximum load, that the brain will recruit every single muscle it physically can. Like, so it shoves the knees in to recruit the adductors as a hip extensor, because that's also there an action of theirs. But when we're doing like a hack squat, pendulum, leg press, or back squat or whatever, we aren't doing max loads very often, and we only do a challenging load that's challenging enough for strength and hypertrophy that we can still control and still produce enough force through our tripod foot, but using our quads and our glutes to do the work. Like if you're allowing or purposefully shoving your knees in to train your adductors, you're doing it wrong. Like you need to go and train them specifically like you would any muscle. And a squat isn't a main movement or any squat pattern for the adductors. You need to go train them specifically. And the final point, going on about athletes and those non-contact sporting movements and sporting injuries, typical for an ACL, and that is where it's one of the only times you really want to try and avoid that and train better movement patterns. Rather than like a drastic cut and change of direction, you want to train stepping from under the body, so striking under the body rather than outside where the center of gravity is, and actually pushing off that top portion of your foot using triple extension rather than stepping on the heel. Because if you're going at full speed and you suddenly change direction or speed with that foot firmly planted and you can't twist and your foot gets stuck and then the twisting is at the knee rather than at the foot or the hip, especially rapid deceleration movements where you plant that leg and then cut, it's the typical mechanism that causes an ACL to tear, as that's where there's a lot of stress on the ACL. And that's where you're at high risk of doing an injury, or your athlete is. But also from landing from a jump, pivoting, twisting, it's not ideal, and we need to try and retrain better stepping, landing, and change of direction mechanics. And there are ways to train this. But in terms that there's all, it's not just knee cave or internal rotation does it. Like there's abduction, there's internal tibial rotation, there's external tibial rotation, there's then you've got your adduction as well. And there are ways, like I said, there are ways to train this and using things like cones to teach athletes or teach yourself if you are an athlete to change direction without striking the ground with their heel and twisting or planting that foot. Like you want to stay on the ball of your foot and press off the ground from under you, without twisting that knee in to change the direction, because when that foot gets locked and then you try to change direction and there's that movement and that external or internal rotation at the tibia or the knee, that's where that ACL is under a lot of stress. So, but again, when we talk about landing mechanics and athletes playing high intensity competition, you physically cannot change or alter it. Like sometimes athletes will step with that typical bad ACL mechanism and be completely fine because they've done it their entire life and that's just natural for them and they've adapted to it and it's their genetics and they're extremely lucky. But and they've repeated this exact motion tens of thousands of times, so their body's used to it. But then one athlete will do it literally once and do their ACL. Like that's the point. Sports are high intensity, they are uncontrolled, they are chaotic. Like your brain does not physically have the time or the capacity to think about perfecting technique when there's a bouncing ball or there's a pressured situation or you have defenders in your face. Like the body is trying to complete so many tasks at once and it's going to override any controlled, in inverted comma, movements that you've done in the gym or tried to learn. And as I said, yes, you can train better change of direction, stepping mechanics and stuff like that, and it's extremely important to do so. But at the end of the day, the brain will revert to the easiest and quickest way to perform the task you're trying to accomplish. So if the brain is using valgus here and there and adduction, and we know that the brain's role is to protect us, like why are we worrying about it so much? Like early rehab and motor control, yes, you want quote unquote stricter mechanics, like teach good early patterns, teach good strength training, teach good stepping and change of direction and landing patterns. Like, teach it early on so that's what the brain has knowledge of. But at end stage rehab, you then need to let the body learn how to organize itself under pressure and perturbation, like getting pushed, under contact, and with low reaction time. Like, if you've done your rehab or athletic performance training properly, the brain will have these good patterns ingrained, but you can't just teach or learn quote unquote perfect mechanics in strength training and then, and depending if you're the coach or the athlete listening to this, and then just go straight back onto the field and expect the body to automatically transfer those skills and never undergo an injury or experience an injury. You need to challenge and expose the athlete or yourself in training in less chaotic environments and then gradually increase the intensity and the speed and the degree of change of direction. So their body or your body is prepared, it's adapted to the forces, and then it's ready for the chaos and the uncontrolled environments, and that's how you reduce injury risk. Like, end stage, before you play sport again or your athlete plays sport again, you should be training with uncontrolled chaos where nothing is planned. Like, let's say you're the athlete or the coach, whatever, the athlete jumps in the air and then someone pushes them in the air so that your body has to practice correcting and organizing itself midair to get back to that good landing position. But then again, there are going to be sometimes it doesn't have the time to do that and it's in a quote unquote bad landing position and it's just luck whether you get injured or not. And then, like, gradually increasing the intensity of mid-air collisions in training whilst catching a ball. Like, these are skills you need to teach and learn. And the more they are practiced, the more it just becomes habit and natural and you get exposed and can adapt to it. But like I said, you also need to allow those movements that aren't technically correct and allow the athlete or yourself to be exposed to it, because it's going to happen in a chaotic, high-pressure environment such as a game. Like, there's going to be valgus, there's going to be internal rotation, there's going to be heel strike, you're going to land wrong. Things change when there's scoreboard pressure, people yelling, people watching, high intensity, finals games, opponents. Like, you actually need to do more of the non-perfect stuff and allow the body to be exposed to it and learn so you don't bubble wrap the athlete or yourself and then get into a game and go from 0 to 100 and chuck into this unexperienced environment. And so yeah, that's knee cave summed up both for strength training and for sport. It's not the devil, you aren't fragile, and we've survived this long with it, so it can't actually be that bad. We just need to be smart about it and know when it should be changed or altered, depending on if there's pain, dysfunction, or decreased performance, or they're a high-level athlete playing a certain sport where there's cutting and jumping. Or if there's nothing like that, then just let it be and use better strength training technique and patterns so your body then doesn't have to revert to knee cave to save you in the first place. So until next time, peace.